Welcome to Stopgap Talks, your go-to podcast for expert insights into the marketing, digital, creative, and research recruitment landscape. With over 30 years of experience, our consultants are here to share the wisdom, strategies, and success stories that can transform your hiring or career journey. If you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review to help others find us. Now let's dive in to the latest episode of Stopgap Talks.
Hi, morning and welcome to Stopgap Talks. I'm Ro, I'm the Director of People and Values here at Stopgap, and I'm with my colleague Amanda, who is a recruitment consultant in the agency team. So today we're going to be talking about diversity, equity and inclusion. So it's a topic that both of us are really passionate about. We're not experts by any means, but we just wanted to be able to share some insights with you today in the hope that there might be some just little nuggets there that you can take away with you, and specifically around why it's important to prioritise diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI, as I'm going to call it from now on, in the recruitment process, and how do we go about doing that. So sort of before we dive in, I think it's probably helpful, isn't it, Amanda, just to define actually what we mean, because there are so many different terms and names that are used out there.
It can be really confusing, and you sometimes wonder if it's an ever-changing playing field. But essentially, you have the words EDI, which is equity, diversity, inclusion, or it could be DEIB, which is diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, or shorter versions of that, as in DEI, DIB. And equally, there's another one, which is JEDI, which I wish was as nerdy as I like to be, but it's justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. So lots of different names, but all essentially focus on the same principles of making people feel included.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, and so today we're going to be talking just using DEI as our term. And additionally, just want to highlight what these individual terms mean for us. So, you know, diversity is around the presence of differences that make all individuals unique. So this can be expressed in a myriad of forms, whether that be sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, gender, age, neurodiversity. There's a vast array of aspects here that can make us different.
Yeah, and I mean, going into the next bit, you've got that equity part. So in ensuring that people are treated fairly, and that they have access and the opportunity are the same across the board. So you're essentially just eliminating those barriers, and making sure that you don't discriminate on any of those bases that you kind of just mentioned, the race, color, national origin. I'm also foreign. Sometimes it's those things, it's those little things that people will feel like they're not being mean about, but they can come out. So, it can do anything, age, marital status, sex, sexual orientation, that gender identity, gender expression, disability, religion, height, weight, veteran status, all of those things fall under those bits of just making people feel that they're being treated fairly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, the inclusion piece is all around, obviously we know there are these differences, but it's around deliberately making efforts to ensure that somewhere is an environment where these differences are welcomed and valued, so having those different perspectives so that they're respectively heard, ensuring everyone individual feels that sense of inclusion.
Yeah, I mean, you can look up, there's something I just really like. It's on Google. Look it up. It's called the DEIB shoes, which is just a really small infographic, which will really break this down quite easily. I'm not going to go through all of it. It's literally like, equality is someone getting a pair of shoes. Diversity is everyone wearing different types of shoes. And then equity is getting a pair of shoes that fits them. It's just a really quick breakdown. It's really cute. Take a look. It'll probably just help, get rid of some of the big jargon that we've just been talking about.
So, yeah, I love your shoe analogy. I definitely think that's a really good pointer. Yeah. I love it. So why is it important for businesses to consider DEI? It's such a big topic. I think you and I could talk about this for days and still not, even touch the surface, I'm sure. And it's obviously really important for everyone and businesses to think about DEI across all aspects of the business. Obviously, we're going to talk about recruitment specifically in a little bit, but there's absolutely so many social, legal, and business benefits for doing so. So it's probably just helpful maybe now, Amanda, if we highlight some of those.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at the idea that what you're doing is broadening your talent pool. By prioritizing those DEI efforts, you're really helping to attract a wider range of candidates, like providing them access as a company to diverse skills and experiences and perspectives. You know, someone could come up with an idea that really drives your business in a different direction, or something that they're missing, and it can you know, enhance that.
Yeah, I definitely know how much I learn from my colleagues, and having that difference of thought and perspective really adds a lot to my my day to day and my work. So absolutely. I guess another one here is about how much it enhances employer brand. So according to a study by LinkedIn, their 2023 Talent Trends report, they highlight that 76% of job seekers view diversity as an essential factor when considering job offers. Now that is huge, isn't it? 76% of people. And I understand it. It's such a key thing for people, and they see and feel the value of it, and they want the employer to be able to demonstrate that it's an important thing for them too.
Exactly. So, yeah, people want to feel safe when they take on a job. So there's certain things there that they, you know, they might have had something bad happen in a job before that, and so they're trying to avoid it. So the more information you give about that ahead of time might answer some questions that they're concerned about.
Yeah, actually, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the next thing is to consider is increasing the employee retention and satisfaction. So making a workplace inclusive and fostering that sense of belonging, you know, it's been shown to increase employees' engagement and reduce your turnover. DEI is an essential workplace characteristic for prospective employees, especially millennials and Gen Z. It's become this bit where people just think it's something that's happening to a younger generation, but you'd be surprised. People are changing, they're identifying in different ways, they're learning about themselves, and they want to know that wherever they go, if they make those changes, that they're going to be part of a team and not excluded in any way.
Yeah. I mean, feeling that belonging in a workplace is key for everyone, isn't it? Whatever that means to them. So absolutely. You know, all of these things can obviously lead, therefore, to a competitive advantage for the business. You know, there can be improved innovation by this broader workforce, and DEI can actively help businesses outperform their competitors. And essentially, that's a key driver for most people, isn't it? Or most businesses.
I was going to say, yeah, it kind of leads into that bit of financial performance. There's going to be companies, you know, in the past, I've seen if they have a diverse leadership in their team, they tend to have better financial outcomes. And I think, you know, we could all say, oh, a nice place to work is one thing. Essentially, a business is there for the commercial as well. So as long as these initiatives are feeding into driving that commercial, this is a way to do it, which is to just look at how you can bring in all these different insights and backgrounds into developing your business going forward to target different audiences, because you have those as part of your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And obviously the sort of the benefits that we've just touched on there, you know, are probably just to name but a few, but they're some of the key ones. And we felt it was important to be able to highlight it here. Just to remind everyone, as I'm sure you already know, you know, the benefit it is and the importance it is to focus on DEI. Okay, so now talking about coming down to that practical bit, you know, what can we be doing to ensure that we're accommodating these different aspects of DEI across the recruitment process in particular? And obviously, you know, recruitment is a far-reaching process. It starts from the pre-advertising, when you're thinking about creating your job spec and making sure the wording's right, etc., for the advertising, interviewing, and then hiring, and then finally onboarding and getting those candidates on. So we're just going to talk through now some of the key sort of suggestions for you to think about at different aspects across that recruitment journey. So I guess the first one that I wanted to call out and highlight here is around training. Obviously, training is key in every aspect of learning and development, but ensuring that everyone in the business is aware of your DEI approach and practice is key. But specifically, obviously, everyone involved in that hiring process in your business. So the hiring managers, line managers, anyone who's doing the interviewing, anyone who's doing the CV reviews, giving them training, help them raise awareness of unconscious bias, what it is, how to try and avoid it, and promote inclusive practices, basically, across the team. Starkly and worryingly, the CIPD research has shown that just 28% of UK employers train interviewers on legal obligations and objective interview practice techniques.
Yeah, surprisingly low, isn't it?
Really low.
I mean, maybe just to feed into that, Rose, is really just to say that we all come into our day-to-day lives with a lot of experience from a wider world. And so, you know, I think it's just important to know that when we come into our day-to-day work environment, that we do kind of carry those unconscious bias in there. And we're trying to make sure that as businesses evolve and as our teams evolve, that we're kind of just aware of how to be kind to some degree. Yeah. And even if you don't necessarily understand where someone comes from, that you're at least considering that maybe they need to be treated with a bit of kindness or understanding in a different way. So that's why training can really help that as a business as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that leads into advertising, right? So let's look at some of the ways to consider that. You look at when you're writing a job description, just ensuring that those job descriptions are clear and that they're inclusive. So think about how that bias needs to be taken out of a job description. So that if you're thinking about the language of what you're using, you know, is it masculine? Is it feminine? You know, is it, you know, does it have unnecessary requirements that it's just fluffy language? Make sure that you articulate certain things in that job description. So that commitment to DEI, when you say something like someone needs to have 10 years experience, you know, does that maybe meet ageism for someone below that who could probably do that job? But equally, are you maybe cutting out, if you say a 3-year experience, are you cutting out a demographic that's been there for much longer, 20 years, but they've got plenty of experience and can do it? But by saying 3 years, are you doing one of two things? Are you maybe cutting out someone who is more experienced because you want to get someone in junior? But equally, if you say something like, you know, this is an entry-level job, but you need to have 3 years of experience, those are very different things. It's not an entry-level job. That's someone going into maybe their second or third job. So you need to be really clear around what that language looks like. And equally, you know, there's something to do there about the clearer that job spec can be, the easier it is for people with a neurodiversity to look at. They want to know what it is that you're asking for and that they can meet those requirements. So, yeah, so that's kind of just the job description, but equally you could look at those multiple, you know, the platforms that you're using. Are you just using the standard ones that your business says that they have these different, you know, credits for? And maybe those aren't the best places to go. Are there other websites that maybe reach a bigger pool, like, you know, a disability website or a flexibility website or just anything else that might be catching more people that you're trying to bring into your business for those additional perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, your comment there about just falling, you know, into the habit of just using what your businesses use, I definitely can hear that and recognize that, you know, in previous roles. And actually, just by having that awareness of what else is out there and trying to be the most diverse in where you're advertising is definitely something that's key to keep front of mind. The other piece there is about thinking about if you as a business are advertising yourself, not using job boards, think about your own website. You know, have you made sure that it articulates your company's DEI policy? You know, do you maybe have the option to have accessibility tools on your website so that ads can be accessed, you know, by as broad a group of people as possible?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that can be, again, imagine if someone comes onto your website and there's lots of bright colors and it's really difficult to distinguish certain things. You know, there's certain accessibility tools that can help people who have dyslexia or maybe have some sort of sight impairment that might read something out there. So, again, this is probably something sitting with the development team to some degree, but it's all those considerations to put into when you're building a website or updating it. Are there additional things that you can put in place that will help people who come to it?
And on that, actually, just, you know, there might be smaller businesses out there. You can also buy sort of off the shelf widgets that can go. So if you haven't got a development team or you don't have a load of money, which we know is obviously tight right now for most businesses, just widgets added in can make a difference as well. So there's lots of different options.
Yeah. I mean, then we're moving into the new phase. You know, you're starting to screen candidates. You've had all your applications from the various places. Now you want to consider how you're going to deal with those applications internally. Maybe you're the HR person or you're the hiring manager. You know, is this the point where maybe there's a policy with the team where you remove details from the CV to make sure it is a fair process? Not all companies do this, but sometimes it does really help if you're worried that that unconscious bias is going to come in. So you might take things off like the names or gender or their location or maybe even their education from that initial screening process, just to minimize the bias and make sure that you're focusing on the skill set on that CV. So yeah, I think there's different cases where, you know, we're in a hybrid environment where sometimes a location can mean, you know, someone makes an assumption that because they live outside of London that it's just going to be too far a commute, but actually most people are doing that nowadays. You know, and equally even in education, I think, you know, Ro, we were talking about this beforehand.
Yeah, I've definitely had experience of this. You know, I've worked somewhere before where I've really helped educate the internal hiring team on requirements, because they had a very specific requirement about wanting candidates from a certain pool of universities. You know, so they were looking outside of the skill set. It was specifically around, you know, that education piece, which could lead to the, you know, socioeconomic diversity point, exclusion, thank you, issue. And so it was really key there to try and avoid that and help educate that actually it's about the skill set and the ability and experience that someone can bring. So by doing that, making blind, you know, CVs blind, as it can be called, as you just said, removing some of those details just takes away any of those potential biases up front.
And again, if your job descriptions were clear, then these things go hand in hand, right? Which is, as long as you're meeting the job description criteria, then it shouldn't matter that those details are removed because they're tied in.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, and obviously an important piece throughout the whole recruitment process is the candidate experience, you know, how you are engaging and interacting with that candidate. And obviously, naturally, we've put it here after the screening, because likely that's when you're going to be reaching out and having most conversations with the candidates that you want to be interviewing. So it's about trying to create an inclusive candidate experience. So provide clear information about the role that you're hiring for, about the culture of the company, you know, remove any ambiguity and potential worry points there that might be there for the candidate.
Yeah, you could even tell them who they're going to be meeting and direct them to maybe that person's LinkedIn profile or something like that. It's a small thing you could do, but it's just something to help them prepare for the next step of if they have been invited to meet with your team.
Absolutely. Great example there of exactly a tangible thing that can be done to help remove that ambiguity, so they know they've got the clearest information when they're coming in, or whether it's a Teams interview. And, you know, the same way, you know, ahead of any interviews being held, ask the candidates, you know, do they require any adjustments? You know, we can speak to people or even see people on Teams, but there might be adjustments that are needed that we have no idea about. So unless we ask, we can't help support them in that. So that might help cover mobility accommodations or neurodiversity accommodations. So anything that we can do to actively address any concerns regarding accessibility or worries around that interview process is what we're trying to get to here.
Yeah, I mean, a good example is I've previously had a candidate who was in a wheelchair, which you can't see over Teams. They didn't disclose. Mm. They go to the interview or they've got the job offer and the company doesn't have the ability to get them up the stairs. They don't have a lift. There's different things, like the desks aren't moved wide enough. So there's these reasons why you want to make it very easy for those people to feel safe to be able to tell you those things ahead of coming into interview. But not everyone feels safe in doing that because they're worried about discrimination. So as long as those policies are discussed in those those first touch points where you're talking about your company, that's where it sort of builds the safety around people disclosing things.
Exactly. That's absolutely true. That safety point is a key thing there.
Yeah, and then let's move on to interviewing, right? This is the main thing that's probably going to be considered the point where you decide whether or not someone is going to be right for your team. So the important thing to start off with is thinking about who's involved in those interview processes and panels. You know, are there individuals from different backgrounds who will kind of help you gain that broader perspective for the candidate on behalf of them as part of the team? So, you know, don't have three senior managers in a team interviewing someone who's at an entry level or maybe in their second job. Maybe have someone else at a similar level in the team as part of that interview panel, just to make them feel a bit more comfortable so it doesn't feel so stress-inducing. But equally, that person in the team will probably enjoy that they're feeling part of that process and being included on their side. So, yeah, and then Another thing to consider is maybe those interview questions, making sure that they specifically reflect your commitment to the DEIB. So, you know, are there certain things that you're trying to find out about those people in those interview questions that will help build the culture and figure out who they are as an individual outside of just the skills that they bring sometimes, because you want to make sure that they fit in with the team culturally. And then, you know, it's looking at those questions and just making sure they're tailored to that job description. So don't ask things that aren't part of what you originally asked that person to prepare for. So again, it's making sure that the hiring managers are trained ahead of that interview process, so that they can drive those interviews and make sure that there's no internal bias that's coming out from them or the panels, and that's also being present in that process throughout. So it's kind of keeping things a bit more clear and focused.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously you're talking about interview questions there. Another idea around interview questions is, you know, maybe send them out ahead of time to the candidate. We talked about earlier about trying to remove that sort of ambiguity or worry for them. What are we actually trying to get out of an interview? For me, it's about trying to understand a candidate's experience, their skill set. Can they do the job that we're trying to hire right now? It's not about a test of, or do they, you know, can they remember all the different examples off the top of their head, you know, and can they articulate that, you know, in an interview panel process type thing. So I've got no issues at all sending interview questions out ahead of time, because actually for me, that makes that interview process and the hiring easier, because if there is a specific question that they're struggling to be able to answer or demonstrate their experience, then that clearly shows to me that it's obviously an area they don't have that experience in. So it makes it much, much clearer to be able to assess again. So I'm all up for sending interview questions ahead of time. And I will also sometimes give the caveat, because obviously interviews for me, you know, can be fluid. You want your structure there so it's fair, and then you're ensuring you're comparing like for like, as it were. Yeah. But again, to try and remove any of that worry, you know, I'll say, obviously, throughout the natural course of the conversation, additional questions might come up if there's something specific that the candidate has told us about that I then want to probe on further. But otherwise, giving that basic questions out there, I think is really helpful. And again, the other thing just to focus on, as we touched about earlier, is, you know, just try and remember when you're creating interview questions and you're briefing your hiring managers, what are we trying to assess here? What are we focusing on? It really should be around that skills and experience, not around the education. So it's about, you know, are they, you know, can they do the job that we need them to do?
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, once we've gone through that interview process, you know, the aim of this whole thing is to be able to then make a job offer and hire someone. So hiring, and when that offer is made, we want to make sure that it's fair across the board, and that's both for the candidate that we're getting to come into the job, but also for our current team. So, you know, sometimes companies, you know, well, companies obviously always try to ensure pay parity, or should try to ensure pay parity across roles there. So some companies might even adjust the existing team salaries to reflect the market rates of the new person being hired if their salary is higher, for example, you know, helping ensure that staff retention and engagement we talked about earlier. And another piece around the hiring thing is, we haven't talked about sort of recording or monitoring diversity and inclusion, but an aspect could be that you're collecting that information up front when candidates are applying for jobs. You're requesting from them to fill in a form around their personal situation and status, and that information can then be used if you've got two candidates who are both absolutely perfect, you just don't know how to choose between. Maybe you're trying to help one specific team be more diverse from the socioeconomic background, for example, and then you can use that information from that initial information that's collected from the candidate, and that can be used to make your hiring decision. So it's just something to think about. You don't have to do it, but of course the main thing to think about is, if you are collecting information, absolutely shouldn't be used as a yes, no type thing in terms of, oh, I'm not hiring this person because they've got X, Y, and Z. It should be used in that sort of blind situation when you're maybe comparing a couple of candidates, or you're wanting to increase your diversity pool.
And equally, just to know that those things probably change over time for a number of people.
Absolutely.
Too. So it's kind of checkpoints and review processes. Maybe, you know, you didn't just collect it before they came to interview. Maybe you check in with them at the review period. Hey, is this still the same? Has anything changed? You know, we're all people at different parts of our lives. So things do change. And maybe you just want to make sure that that makes them feel like they're still being considered, you know, when different things are happening in the company.
Exactly. And that information exactly should be used in your broader DEI processes, because it's all about reviewing and revisiting, isn't it? Like you say.
Yeah. And I mean, the final part of this puzzle is the onboarding process, right? So you've found the right person, you've done the interview correctly, and you've promised all of these things about what kind of place it is to work. You know, are there different initiatives that you can put into place once they've been onboarded? Like, you know, are there different inclusive groups that exist in the company where they can go and feel safe to be included? Like, you might have LGBTQ plus groups who... It just helps people to get together, to feel like they can do things together. Sometimes people are running clubs or cake eating clubs or really whatever it is. They have a place where it just feels safe that they can catch up. And there's so many different ways to do this. We have menopause groups. We have, you know, people who are just really just in running clubs, you know, but it's kind of having these different spaces where people can feel like they can share as much as they want to or walk away. But equally, if something goes wrong and they don't feel they can bring it to a manager, that they can maybe just talk to someone who understands that cultural bit first and might guide them in some direction. So that's some sort of just something to think of, an initiative you can put in place. And then equally, you know, if accommodations were needed, and that's something that was disclosed in the beginning, like maybe it's software or equipment or some sort of flexibility around, I don't know, your child's schedule or some other commitment that you have to a family member or something. It's just making sure that those have been maintained, that they've been put in place, and equally that they're being reviewed. So, you know, do you check in with someone a couple of weeks after they started that's been done? But are you looking in, you know, 3 months or 6 months or a year? Have things changed? Have those accommodations changed? And equally, have anyone else in your business seen those things being put in place for new starters, but it hasn't been considered for people who are already there? So maybe you want to look at it as a full policy to be something that regularly happens, to check in with all staff at that time. So onboarding is just something where people join, but equally these processes are going to ever evolve and change. You know, DEI is not something that stands still. Like, once you've done it, it's done. It's something that can continually move.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we've obviously just highlighted very quickly, galloped through some of the key touch points across the recruitment process there. And hopefully there are some quick wins that people can take away, you know. And if you haven't actively thought about DEI and how you could be focusing on that in your workplace before, now is a great time to start. But as you've just said there, Amanda, DEI isn't a quick fix. It's not like, oh, great, I've done some training to my managers, or I've updated the policy and it's, oh, that's it, I don't need to think about it. It's an ongoing change process. And it's across the whole business. Obviously, we've touched on the recruitment piece here, but now it can lead into that whole employee experience, employee journey. And obviously, ideally, you want to try and get buy-in from the top, and that helps it feed down across the business to make it really effective. But if for whatever reason you can't, everyone can still have a big part to play in it, and just making some small tweaks can make a big difference to everyone.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised, a lot of people in your business probably are really passionate about it and might want to give their opinion to the efforts that you're putting in place. So, you know, you could have different groups to feel like some people have the input, or maybe they want to drive certain initiatives. Maybe they want to talk about how great your company does it. I think you just have to make sure that when you're bringing people's voices, especially to articles or something along those lines, just make sure they're not being used as a token story about this is how great we are, and there's like one person has to be the voice of all of those things. Make sure that people are comfortable in sharing their story and kind of giving that insight, but don't make it feel forced in another way. I think there's this line to kind of make people give that insight, but equally have it feel like it's holistic and it's just natural part of your business.
It's a genuine part. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, other ways to maybe consider this in a broader way is how do you stay involved, or where do you go next, or how do you stay on top of these various things? And I think both Roy and I talking about it in general, we, you know, for us, a lot of things come from LinkedIn. I know we're on there every day because that's the kind of business that we're in. But, you know, I'm generally following people or watching topics that I'm interested in, and sometimes I'm engaging with them, or maybe I'm just reading relevant news, or I'm just trying to get an insight or a personal point of view that maybe I don't understand. But I think there's different ways that you can use tools like LinkedIn to find that information, but maybe from a business point of view, and just that might drive some of your ideas internally. You could be looking at different topics that maybe you feel like you should be more representative of, and maybe you want to get an insight and reach out to some of those people and ask for them to come and do a talk or training or something along those lines. So as long as you're not, you know, going on LinkedIn and kind of being ranty about something, I think you're fine. It's just another resource to maybe use to find out a bit more about topics like this.
I mean, exactly. I think knowledge is power, isn't it? So knowing is keeping on top of what's going on and knowing as much as we can is key. Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you, Amanda. It's been obviously great having a chat, as always, as we say. We do this all the time anyway, don't we? We do. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening and tuning in to today's episode. You know, we really hope you found it helpful. If you've got any thoughts or questions on the topic, please do drop them in the comments. We'd so love to hear from you.
Yeah, and don't forget to like, share, follow, and basically just keep this amazing community going. And hopefully we'll speak to you next time, and maybe the conversation can be even bigger. So take care, and look after yourselves.
Thanks. Bye.